You're listening to TJ Talks. This podcast probably is going to contain a lot of explicit language, so you're forewarned. Welcome to TJ Talks. I am Judd.
And I'm Teresa.
Hey. Can you tell us what secret location you are recording from today?
I am mile high, baby. I am in Denver, Colorado, where it's all legal all the time.
They don't call it the mile high place for nothing, huh?
Appropriately named, my friend. The brownies here are fucking amazing.
Of course, I'm sure you haven't had any, but...
Of course not. I'm pristine and lily white, so I'll just drink my red wine and do a podcast with you.
Wow. Did you drive to Denver?
No. I flew here, and boy, are my arms tired, but I did fly here. Thank you for laughing at that. It's a good joke. But was driving yesterday when I Instagrammed that picture, and mm-hmm. It was just so beautiful. The sky, it was like Pixar drew, you know, the foreground. I mean, it was just that blue with the puffy white clouds. It really is. Every once in a while, as a grown-up, I really get a chance to look around and go, wow, nature is beautiful and our surroundings are really amazing. And we don't necessarily always appreciate that when you kind of get caught up in the day-to-day. But having that stretch of highway where it was just blue sky, white clouds, 85 degrees, it was pretty sweet. It felt pretty good to be alive. Not too shabby, right?
And the reduced humidity probably was nice. Not all sticky.
Correct. Yeah, you got, I'm sure, all that going on in Florida. And here it's beautiful. I mean, it's frankly a little bit warmer than I would have liked. I was hoping it was going to be a little bit cooler because it's been so damned hot in California. But it was beautiful.
It rained tonight, today. It stormed. And I'm a fair weather runner. And so it like stopped raining like 30 minutes before the run time.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm not running. There's puddles out there.
You delicate flower, you.
I'm totally a fair weather runner. I got a pair of running shoes that I just don't want to have soaking wet.
You don't want to step in puddles.
And mud and, you know, and just, yeah, it's it's horrible. I mean, that's, yeah, and I feel bad because a couple people showed up and they ran and I was like, mm-mm, not me.
Yeah, no, I mean... You know, that's also the beauty of being a grown-up, is that you can decide when you want to do stuff like that. And if you don't want to run in the rain, don't run in the rain.
But I still feel bad, because I didn't have a workout today. But, you know, it's nice kind of sitting home on a Wednesday night that I haven't done in a long time.
That's pretty sweet.
I hope I don't get used to it.
I hear you on that. I'd like to sit home on a Wednesday night. That would be a nice change.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, what are we going to talk about today?
We got a list of things. What did you write down?
We're going to have a little bit of tech talk. We won't overdo it, but we'll just a little bit. Promise we won't overdo
you
it.
You are just like, you know, beaming about this Apple release from last week. So, yes, we have to talk about that.
And then we're going to talk about some politics. And we got a bunch of little things that are sub-subjects of politics. So, we'll do that. Yep. And then we got the question. There's an incident that happened on The View today or yesterday. And so, so that begs the question, can people piss you off to a point where an apology doesn't matter?
Yes.
And then we're going to talk about Hollywood diversity.
Right.
So that's kind of our thing today. So let's get going.
Well, I want to say, and I'm wagging my finger at you, because you didn't even know that the GOP debate was on tonight.
You know, there's, 300 people all applying to be the GOP frontrunner, and there's only one guy. Yeah, they can say that Ben Carson is neck and neck with Trump, but until Trump... actually, until the GOP realizes that he's just a horrible person... Then, you know, it just isn't going to matter. I mean, if you want to support a guy who believes in prejudicism, you know, I don't want to call it racism, but I mean, come on, you know, I mean, there's video after video. I mean, would you hire a guy for business that's ran four times businesses under the ground. America can't run bankruptcy.
Well, I don't. So here's what I think we need to separate about Donald Trump, the celebrity, versus Donald Trump, the candidate, versus maybe just regular Donald Trump, right? I think there's three sides to his onion or layers or whatever. So I think Donald Trump, the businessman, like most billionaire businessmen, is going to have a rap sheet that's got some good decisions and some bad decisions. Bankruptcy for four times, I believe, in businesses, is a big hashtag under the bad decisions. But he's still a billionaire by rights. He's funding his own campaign. So in that regard, the money does talk and the bullshit kind of walks, right? Like whatever his bankruptcies cost people and cost taxpayers would be an interesting thing to note, right? And the reason I'm saying it could cost us anything is if his bankruptcies decided not to pay other vendors who then declared bankruptcy. And, you know, there's a trickle-down effect to that. I'm not saying it's responsible at all, but it does happen in business all the time. So I almost – does it happen four times? I don't know. But I almost don't want to – I don't want to paint him with that brush of being a bad guy because he had four bad businesses or bad business days. You know what? I want to encapsulate it that way.
My whole point is have bad business, but you don't get to run the country based upon your inability to run a company with a proven track record of four failures.
But I think his current track – I'm not a Donald Trump fan, so please don't – I'm not combing over right now.
Sorry.
I'm not doing the comb over for Trump. Uh-huh. I'm just saying that – I still think as an entity and a
there's a hashtag for you.
Do the comb over?
Comb over for Trump. Hashtag.
Comb over for Trump. Sorry. I think that he still is a viable business entity, however much we do or don't like that. So I just want that to be noted. Like, we can complain about it all the time, but he's still a billionaire and many times over. So
are the Koch brothers billionaires, but you don't see them trying to run the country. They know that they need to
not
pay for
outwardly,
it.
Outwardly. They're buying candidates inwardly.
Well, that's what you do. You know, if you're a Trump, he said it before. He said, I've paid off every candidate in this room. You know, but I'll take your money there. That's what they all said.
So businessmen aside, celebrity.
That's what he's going on.
I think that's his weakest claim. Like, I think that's the fleeting thing that is going to fail him. You know, Celebrity Apprentice is going to come on the air again with host Arnold Schwarzenegger. So that's going to put a chink in his armor. I mean, I think that celebrity thing in the U.S. is what people live and die on. And I think he's going to die on that faster than anything else.
If he becomes the president, then we have Idiocracy, that movie. It will be the reality.
Oh, it's so crazy. I mean, you see all these references. There were Simpsons episodes where they referenced a Donald Trump presidency. I mean, just complete insanity. And yet it's a little bit true, right? So I feel like this is a thing. Now, let's talk about viable things he says.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to tax hedge fund dealers more, and so does Jeb Bush, for that matter. So the fact that any Republican candidate would use the word taxes and increase in the same sentence that didn't include the word don't is a big deal.
You mean rich people? Tax rich people? Oh, my God. I don't – but, you know, what? They could one day become rich, so why would they tax the potential – that they could become. That's the whole deal, right?
It's a smidge of a tax. I mean, it's not going to change, you know, the scope of public education, this tax. But it's something. It's something more than anyone has ever iterated even before.
Right.
So that's fine. His crazy Mexican rants and crazy immigrant stuff, and maybe we've talked about this on the show before. I almost say, please, please, Donald, build the wall. Build a big wall, right? And see how the hell it works. Because it's been talked about many times that it won't. But if it makes you feel better, do it. And sometimes it feels like, because this argument is so polarizing, about the wall in particular, there's the people that say, build the wall, electrify it, you know, make it 400 feet tall, whatever it is. And then there's the other people that say, don't build a wall, that's not right, blah, blah, blah. I say, go ahead and build it, because it's not going to do anything to stem the immigration. Penn and Teller proved that, right?
You know, there's a wall down at San Diego between Tijuana and San Ysidro.
Yeah.
And they dug a tunnel underneath it.
It won't stop anything. But the part of me that says, please, just go ahead and do it so we can stop having the argument of if it will or if it won't. Because then we'll know definitively that it won't. And so then we can stop having the argument. The same way, let's let the gays get married so that the gays can be married, be happy, or miserable like the rest of us married people.
Yeah.
And when the whole world doesn't crumble and civilizations don't fail and everything doesn't go wrong with the world, we can stop having this argument about, well, gay marriage is going to ruin, you know, our society. I think we can safely say now that our society is still intact regardless of gay marriage.
I heard they want to have a reality show where super religious people have to live under Leviticus law.
Oh, yes, law. I did hear about this. Yeah. It'd be perfect.
Right? See how that works.
Do you know that author, A.J. Jacobs?
He
wrote a book called The Year of Living Biblically, and he's written several books. The Year of Living is kind of his thing, and he adopts a lifestyle or something or a habit for a year and see how it affects himself. And he did that. He didn't shave for a year. He had someone stone him. He stoned somebody in judgment. I mean, it was like crazy. And he's great. I mean, it's just, you don't live biblically in this day and age. So I would love to see that show. I think that'd be great.
Everybody. It's crazy.
So the last thing I want to say about Donald Trump is as a candidate, he's only as viable as his newer, gooder ideas. And I don't think he's got too many of them. So the celebrity fuse is burning, and I think it's getting near the end.
Well, real conservatives are going to paint Donald Trump as a liberal that's showing up to steal the conservative movement. That's what they have to do. They have to go farther to the right to make him look like he's in the left.
Yeah, like he's a centrist or a leftist. Yeah, yes, exactly.
That's what's going to happen tonight. We're not watching it, but if we were, that we'll probably see that.
Yeah.
They have to distinguish, separate, you know, it's like they say, right? Got to keep them separated. And here's the worst part is if most of the people who are watching don't appeal to that super right philosophy,
right,
it will only make Trump more popular because they're going, those people are fucking crazy.
Yeah, you're right. So, okay, I want to talk about something that Donald Trump is doing that I think has some relevance. This quote-unquote hashtag, Make America Great Again.
Okay.
That's Donald Trump's logo. And it's based on the Ronald Reagan. It wasn't a hashtag when Ronald Reagan used it as a slogan. We only have hashtags in the 21st century. But his thing was Make America Great. Trump adds the again part as if we aren't great at this moment, which I'm almost okay with because I think there are a lot of things about us that aren't great, right? And we do need to do work in certain areas. But what I'm laughing at as a, you know, pretty much dyed-in-the-wool liberal Democrat, I'm actually okay with Make America Great Again because there are a lot of things that I would like to see changed. So, and I'm going to give you this funny example, and this has nothing to do with politics, but do you rent cars ever? Have you rented a car lately?
Sure.
Okay. And do you, or maybe your current car, my car is old. My current car does not have a backup camera. Do you have backup camera? Okay.
Nope.
This is ruining us. We don't need the backup camera. We need to sit in the driver's seat and turn our head over our shoulders and look behind us before we back up the car. A backup camera is the biggest, most unnecessary piece of training wheels that I think desensitizes us to the actual act of driving. That driving is not a passive activity. You don't watch it happen. You do it. And when you watch it on a screen, what's going on behind your car, You're not doing it. You're not driving. You're not engaged with it. I do not love the backup camera. And I think part of the Trump appeal is that make America great again means people pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and people finding work and people living the American dream and working harder or whatever. I think some of that is attributed to his make America great again. And I think backup cameras prohibit us from being the people we need to be because it's too simple and it doesn't, you don't have to do anything and it's just given to you. That path is just given to you. You haven't looked for it. You didn't seek it. You didn't have anything happen. And I'm renting a car that has this backup camera. And I was parallel parking, which I'm a good parallel parker. I've been driving for 72 years. I know how to parallel park a car. But that backup camera was on, and it was beep, 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 beeping at me because I was getting close to a vehicle, as you would when you're parallel parking. It's a tight space. But it was so annoying and so incessant, and I was so worried about what the backup camera said versus what my instincts of driving and knowing for 30-plus years of driving. Like, I let the camera get the best of me. And I thought, this is not good. I want to override. I want to be able to turn this off because I don't want this backup camera helping me. I want to do this on my own. And I feel like that's what Make America Great Again is about. Like, turn off your backup cameras, people, and drive.
Turn your fucking head around.
Yes. Turn over your shoulder. Look behind you. Yeah. Get a sense for how big your car is. Is it going to fit in this space? I know this is a silly, silly, silly analogy, but I think it's really true. And I think oh, my God. Beep. I'm going to have a stroke if I hear that sound one more time. So, okay, rant over. But all I'm saying is that backup cameras are like welfare. And maybe, no exaggeration, and maybe people need to be responsible for looking behind them and taking care of themselves.
Well, there ain't no welfare going on my truck or my smart car, just letting you know.
It's these newfangled cars. And I know I sound like I'm 1,000 years old by saying that and get off my lawn, but I really
don't know what it's like, Sonny. Back in my day, we didn't have backup cameras with computerized lines that told you when you were getting close to the thing.
And the lines are so, they just throw me off, and I'm like, I just don't want to see it. If I owned a new car, I would put tape over it or something.
It would beep all day long as you drive. You know what? We should find out, actually, if that happens and go around and make it a thing to put tape over people's backup sensors.
Oh, my God. We'd probably cause tens of thousands of accidents because people won't know what to do. They couldn't possibly actually look over their shoulder to see how close they were to the next car behind them.
Wouldn't that be the most awesome gag?
That's a great prank. I love it.
We got to find out if that actually works, though.
All right. Maybe I'll turn in this rental car with a tape over it.
Okay, so this kind of whole thing brings me to this thing. I'm talking about, I'm taking these classes, my master's courses, and this what you've talked about plays into this course I'm taking right now, which is Business Ethics for Managers.
And first of all, business and ethics. Ay-yi-yi.
I know. So the question last week came up about how business, government, and people should handle the poverty in America.
Okay.
You know, who's responsible? What are the problems with it? And that sort of thing. And okay, you start looking at these stats. And I started off my essay, because I had to write an essay, and talking about Newsroom.
Sure.
You've seen that show. You know, the first episode, the Jeff Daniels gets on, you know, he's asked this question very pointedly. Is America the greatest nation in the world?
Right.
Which goes back to make a great again, right? And so I was like, you know, I'm totally going to take this and make this the beginning of this poverty thing. And because if you listen to the whole speech, he says, you know, at one time we used to fight wars on poverty, not on people. Mm-hmm. You know, but I don't know that he's going to help give a hand up to anybody. I don't know that he's going to really solve any of those problems. You know, hashtags are great, but there's got to be a plan behind it.
Are you talking Trump? Or are you talking Trump. Jeff Daniels? Trump. Yeah, Trump. Right.
You know, so, you know, the ethics is comes down to, you know, you start to realize that 14% of Americans live below the poverty. That doesn't mean that they don't have a job. That just means they don't make enough money to be able to either eat or live in a, you know, with a roof over their head or what, you know, have the basics.
Right.
At any point in time, over 90 million Americans over the course of a year are homeless.
It's crazy, isn't it?
In this country, that's outrageous. Right. It's outrageous. There's nobody that should go a day in the United States without a meal. One meal a day, no matter what. You should be able to get it. Just simply, I mean, we're the richest country in the world from the standpoint of, you know, our ability to produce food and everything that we do, even though we're not number one in anything anymore.
So can we have this discussion and maybe you can, okay, so take mental illness out of the equation.
Absolutely.
All right?
Yeah.
So,
we weren't talking about those really.
But that is a large, substantial portion of the homeless population or
it's not. That's the misnomer that people believe that, but that really is a small fraction of
the
overall.
You're right. What I'm trying to say is that that is a part of the problem, right?
Yeah.
So there are vagabonds in our society and nomads, sure, and people who just want to live on the rails, right? Okay,
right.
So take out that 0.01% of whatever the homeless population is,
yeah,
and leave it to you or me go 6 months without a paycheck.
Yeah.
Are you living in your apartment? Probably. I know I'm not living in my house anymore if I'm 6 months without a paycheck, right? Which,
right,
shame on me at 46 years old. I don't have $25,000 in savings to live on for, you know, a quarter of a year or whatever. But right, okay, 6 months of unemployment is not unrealistic. So if you're one of those people, capable, able-bodied, sound of mind.
Yeah.
And I think that is the largest majority of the homeless population.
Yeah.
How do we address that? What went wrong? Where do we fix it? What's the plan? And in your course or in your class, how is business supposed to fix this?
Well, it's a combination of, my perception based on what I did research on was it's government and business has to work together to solve the problem.
But what has business got to do, right? Like, so this feels like a social safety net issue for me that is government sponsored. So I don't know how business fixes this. I mean, business can provide a better living wage, but that's a governmental higher federal minimum wage.
But, you know, business can't expect a tax break and then send the jobs overseas.
True.
This is the ethics.
Okay, so that's a bigger global question.
Yeah.
All right.
You can't, there's things that you, if you're a business, that you can't expect to take and not give. And so, I mean, lots of businesses do give back to their community. I'm not, this isn't like a wholesale, like all business sucks, because all business does not suck.
Absolutely. That's the problem. We can't have a conversation where it doesn't feel like you're painting all big business or all big pharma with this brush of they're malevolent and no good. That's
right.
Not, you know, only in it for the money. That's not the case for probably the majority of corporations,
but,
you know.
But, you know, here's the thing, and this is one thing that we got from this particular module or whatever, is that in America, we blame the homeless for being homeless. It's their fault. They, you know, they could go to school. They could go get a job. It's their fault. In other countries, like in Europe, they don't blame the homeless for being homeless.
Okay.
They think that it's an unfortunate condition that happened because of situations that are above and beyond a lot of times the individual.
Mm-hmm.
That they're capable and they would work. They just, you know, for whatever reason, the economy tanked and they lost their job. And they see more of a social responsibility to help their homeless or their poverty stricken. And so, you know, and as we move into this political campaign, you know, that's where we're going to see a big defining line is how do people see homeless or poverty in America? Because they're 14%, which is not the majority of Americans. And those people aren't even voting because they can't even, hell, they're worried about living from paycheck to paycheck or garbage can to garbage can. So they're, you know, they need somebody to speak for them.
Advocate for them. Absolutely.
But the people who would advocate for them are like, I got mine. Go fuck yourself.
It's a real disconcerting problem. And I feel like as an average citizen who has a better than average standard of living, upper middle class, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what the definitions of that are. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I own some of that problem. In my community, the homeless population has, you know, if not quadrupled, it's much larger than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. How, I'm not doing anything for that. You know, if a guy comes up to me in a parking lot and asks for change, okay, I'll give him some change, but that's not solving the homeless problem. And in fact, that's probably contributing to it, right? So I don't necessarily know what to do as a citizen of good standing who wants to help out. What? How do we fix this?
Well, you know, it's a combination of jobs and and homeless shelters and housing. Because the homeless is another, it's a subset of the poverty issue, you know. Because we still provide some, you know, like WIC and welfare and a lot of other things for people.
Right.
But you know, so, I mean, the homeless is one part of that segment.
Right.
And, but it's the people who can work, that want to work, that we definitely need to focus on to make sure that them and their kids are definitely taken care of.
Yeah. Well, and it's a trickle-down thing here, too, right? Where you have one conviction of a minor felony or problems with the law or whatever. You know, lose your car due to a DUI, then you can't work. Then you have, you know, then you're without work, you don't have income. I mean, there's all these other contributing factors that might not be heinous, horrible things that have happened to an individual, but it creates this whole systemic problem where they can't get good employment or they can't get good placement or whatever. Well, there's a lot to be fixed.
Well, you know, the poverty is also related to crime and health problems. All of these things are all interrelated. So if you start to do things like from a government standpoint, and I know people hate to hear this, but government-sponsored health care would be great for everybody.
If nobody had to worry about getting sick and going bankrupt, that'd be fucking awesome.
You know, that would be one place to help solve poverty in America. Mm-hmm. You know, why don't we just have a, you know, another line item on our thing? You've got Medicare. We've got health care.
Right.
And give me, I'll pay my percentage, whatever it is, you know?
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, I don't think Donald Trump has an answer for that. I don't know that any candidate.
I think he would go for that. He's been talking single payer.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Okay,
I heard
exciting.
Him say that. Yeah, but, you know, he can't, he's, you know, but he won't say that now because he's trying to secure a Republican nomination.
A bid, right, for the nomination. But Sanders is the only one who'll say it out loud.
Well, yeah, Sanders will. Yeah. I mean, having that will, what was the other thing? And there was another thing that will all play into raising a person's level so they don't have to worry about those things.
Right.
You know, and actually, actually single payer healthcare is good for business. The only people that are opposed to it is doctors to some degree because they like to make an exorbitant amount of money. And
well, yeah, I mean, I don't know why employer sponsored healthcare is our system. It just, I know my company would probably love to not have to deal with that. I don't think it makes companies competitive the way everyone talks about how it does. Like, oh, I'll go work for so-and-so because their package is better. I don't know that that's the deciding factor for most people on employment.
Unless you have a very sick spouse or something like that and need it.
Well, nowadays that the pre-existing condition clause is gone, I think it's less of a, especially now, it's less of a competitive factor for companies with benefits. So, yeah. No, I agree. There's a lot to fix.
Mm-hmm. So, anyways, that's the story there. But I think that these classes make me, well, if you want to be successful, you have to have a bit of a liberal mindset to be in these classes. Because I don't know, how could you approach that ethical dilemma and say, well, it's really not anybody's problem, so they can all go fuck themselves. You know, let the homeless be homeless.
Yeah, you can't be Ebenezer Scrooge. Like, are there no workhouses? Like, you know, you really have to have an open mind about fixing the problem.
I think so. I mean, unless you believe the idea of we need classes in America to be successful, you need to have homeless people and people who are willing to work for nothing so that the rich can be richer. And there's some people who believe that that's part of how our society works.
Well, yes, I'm sure there are a lot of people. And there are a lot of people that also believe that as an underclass person, I guess if that's the right term, and I don't mean freshman or sophomore, I mean, you know, in wages standard, that without that hunger or that drive for I want more, I want it all, I want to be on top, like that is a motivating factor for certain characteristic type people, that that's where they get their motivation and their you know, drive to be successful, which who do you see that in the most? Immigrants, right? I mean, that's why they come here and work really fucking hard to make it, to make the American dream happen. So meanwhile, the conservative side is always anti-immigrant or oftentimes anti-immigrant.
10,000 Syrians.
Oh, that's all we're going to get, right?
Right. That's all. But
and everybody else, people, Germany's doing 800,000. I mean, it's just,
is that right?
It's, yeah. Yeah.
800,000?
Yes.
Wow.
And we're doing 10,000 and complaining about it.
And complaining about it. That's right.
Right.
I didn't realize 800,000 Germany.
That was the number. Yeah. Yeah. Merkel said she would take them all.
Wow.
So, wow. Or, you know, not to take them all, but take that many. And you know, and against great consternation and a lot of backlash from her own internal folks. But she's doing it.
Is that like the whole country's emptying out of people? Of Syria? Is the entire...
It has to be, right? Like, how many people are left?
Are they flicking the light off? Hey, last one out. Because, I mean, many people...
Only you can make that joke. Oh
how
God,
many people are left? I mean, they're killing people left and right. I mean, you know, the guy who runs the government is Christian.
Assad is Christian?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not a Muslim. Everyone thinks that he's Muslim.
Well, there's another banner waving for Christianity.
and he's not even from Syria.
Oh my gosh. This makes my head hurt.
Hold on. Let me get you some stats on this.
Oh my gosh. Can we talk about something fun like rainbows and puppies and
unicorns?
And unicorns. God, I love unicorns.
Yeah, he has all these Arabic names and stuff like that.
Our president has an Arabic name, Barack Hussein Obama.
Yeah, let's see here.
Just ask Donald Trump.
and he's an eye doctor. The guy who's the, you know, Assad is an eye doctor.
Oh, the man with no vision is an eye doctor, huh?
That's it. Let's see.
Like a Twilight Zone episode, right? That writes itself. Evil dictator, ophthalmologist by trade, can't see the future and can't see the well-being of his own citizens.
Totally crazy.
Where's Rod Sterling when you need him?
I'm telling you. I can't find it here. But apparently he went to school. I think he went to school somewhere in England or something like that.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's criminal is what it is.
Yeah, it totally. Anyways, we don't need to belabor the political aspects anymore. Let's talk about more important things like iPhones.
I knew you were going to go there next.
Come on, let's go there. We need to break this up.
Oh my God. Can we just talk about what time did your erection happen before the press release? I know you love this stuff. And there's nothing wrong with loving it. It's very important stuff. But you're very happy about it. Can we talk about who you are in the Apple world?
I'm nobody in the Apple world.
Well, you're a beta tester.
I'm a developer. I can say that. I'm a developer.
Oh, I'm a developer. Look how he casts that off.
You know what I've developed? I've developed nothing.
If you put that on your OkCupid profile and start going in the right groups, I'm sure you'll get some girls on. Developer for Apple. Yes!
iOS developer? You know what? That's what I should totally do. See how many.
iOS developer.
I should put that on my Tinder and see what happens.
I'll totally swipe right on you. I love hey, Apple now. Shit. That's good.
That's kind of funny.
I think that's awesome. I think that's fun. Okay, so I want less than 2 minutes. What can I expect from my new stuff? Go.
Well, with your iPad with iOS 9, which is out now, you can download it now, tonight.
Right.
You get multitasking. You get some battery savings. Battery life savings will be great.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because I know I told you 2 minutes, but I heard today somebody was saying that if my phone is placed against a table upside down, that it's going to sense that it's facing a table, and so it's not going to light up when there's a message, and so that, or when there's a whatever, some sort of notification. So that battery savings alone for people is going to give them like an additional, you know, 3 hours a day of battery, because it's not going to light up on its own because it's already face down on a table and it's going to know that.
It's going to know, don't disturb me, basically.
Right? Which is crazy when you think about it. So anyway, go on. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it has a mode that it'll go into when it hit 20%, and it'll automatically save your battery for that last 20% to keep you longer than normal.
Super smart.
Yeah. So they've got some, like, they'll turn off all your background notifications, all that kind of thing. Siri's getting an improvement. It looks kind of cool, but it'll do this Hey Siri thing when it's plugged in. You can yell at it, Hey Siri, play some music. Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah, or send a text. I don't even use it to the level that you probably could use it. Just very minor stuff. That's the key, is there's just little enhancements that you're going to notice. Not anything huge, but it's the little stuff. And I've only had it for a day, so we'll see.
Okay, well, so you've had it for a day, and you are so far just learning everything good.
Yeah, yeah. But I did order the phone.
Okay.
The 6S. I got that coming. Super excited. 12 megapixel camera. Super, super fast phone. Looking
forward
to that.
But just the 6 regular size, not the Plus.
Yeah, I did not buy the Plus.
Damn it, you're missing out.
I know. You know, the
size matters, Judd, and I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah, you know the one thing about the Plus that is different than the little one? The little one is that it has video stabilization built into the Plus.
Not
a special video stabilization element that the regular one does not have. But they both have some high quality video that they produce, 4K video. So looking forward to it.
All right.
Awesome sunrise pictures and other great photos. You know, we have to be able to take better selfies.
New Steve Jobs movie. Are you in? Are you down?
Sure. I'm sure. I heard Steve Wozniak said it was okay, so I'm down.
Aaron Sorkin wrote it. It's going to be great.
If Wozniak likes it, then I'm okay.
That's all right.
That's how I go. I'm with the Woz.
You're with the Woz.
Yeah, the Woz is he's my Steve.
Hashtag make Woz great again.
Yeah. See, he's the liberal ethics guy. Comparatively, if you were to say one's left and one's right, Jobs was very conservative, right wing guy. I mean, if you were to say that these two have a disparity, that they do.
We need Steve Jobs and Woz to have a kid to see what that would be. You know what I mean? That would be the perfect hybrid of crazy, insane innovator versus crazy, insane innovator who was fun.
Bill Gates.
That I think would be cool.
Bill Gates.
It would be Bill Gates. All right, so tell me about the 12-inch iPad. Do I need this?
I'm getting it.
God damn it.
12.9 inch.
12.9, but you rounded up to 13.
I did.
Like the man that you are.
Like the short guy that goes from, 1.1 and 3/4 and a half of an inch to, oh, hell yeah, I'm 5'2".
Okay, and then, so tell me, how do the new presentations look with the new guy? He's not wearing the black turtleneck. He's doing his own thing. He hands it off a lot. Like, do you think Apple has lost some of its luster in the presentation, or do they still tickle everybody's testicles just enough that we get super excited and these things blow up.
Yeah, I think we do get super excited. I don't think that he's the dynamic speaker that Steve Jobs is. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs was a presenter.
Mm-hmm.
And the only person who comes kind of close to that is Phil Schiller, who's I like his presentations, but he's still not Steve Jobs. He's pretty close.
Yeah, those are big. That's a big turtleneck to fill.
Steve Jobs was able to, like, make people feel like what he had to say and the stuff that he was going to tell you was going to change your life.
Yeah.
Everybody else is copying Steve.
Right.
And at least they're making every attempt that they can to, you know, turn out the carbon copies. But then, you know, when I saw the stylus, and everybody in that crowd knows that Steve Jobs always said that there will never be a stylus.
Yes.
Hell is freezing over right now.
Okay, so I'm going to go off on a tangent here again.
Yeah.
But I had this conversation last week, and I made a post on Facebook that received lots of comments, and I want to be on the right side of history, okay? So Steve Jobs was on the wrong side of history. If a stylus is necessary, then you use the stylus, right?
Okay.
Okay, so the two space after the period in typing.
Yeah.
Do you do that?
Absolutely, every time.
And you're never going to stop doing
it. I'm never going to stop doing it. They can take it away.
You're on the wrong side of history.
I don't care.
But I think it's important to evolve and change the way we're supposed to evolve and change. Now, if Steve Jobs were still alive, and we don't know that for sure, I think he would have said, you know what? I was wrong about that stylus, and it really can come in handy, and here's how and why. And he would have spun it so that we would be okay with it. And if Steve Jobs were to tell you, Judd Spitzer, only one space after a period when you're typing instead of two, then you would be doing it now.
Well, I'll tell you why. I understand.
Tell me why you're wrong, Judd.
Tell me why you're wrong. First off, let me tell you about the periods and why.
Oh God, yeah. This is, I need another man in my life telling me about periods. Go on.
Okay. So you've read the article. I mean, this is all a throwback from back in the printing press days.
Yes, okay. And the typewriter days, the typewriter days are gone, my friend.
Okay. So, if you type, then you can do two spaces, but if you use a computer, you can only do one?
Yeah, if you're on an IBM Selectric typewriter, go ahead with your two spaces.
Books that are on shelves in print today,
right?
Recall and burn them all, because they have two spaces after the period.
No, don't recall and burn them all.
They're wrong.
Just as if we were living in the times when people thought the world was flat, and then it was determined that, the world isn't flat, we're not going to go back and, you know, burn everything. We're just going to move forward with the new correct knowledge about the circular, you know, the circumference of the universe or the world. And I think that it's important to notate when you've been wrong in history, and move forward.
Let's not say that it's wrong. Let's just say it's not necessary. There's a difference between wrong and necessary.
That's fine. I'll split that fucking hair with you if you want to.
I want to because you know why? Because if I do it and it's not necessary, it's just extra.
Love this. It's part of the, you know, why no one learns cursive writing anymore, because it's not necessary. The extra space after the period, two spaces after a period, isn't necessary. We only need one. I just think it's interesting. And I personally want to go down as being on the right side of history. That's just me.
You know what? The reason is because if you learn to type on a typewriter, it is very, very difficult to reteach yourself to do one space after period. It really is.
It's automatic. And the iPhone doesn't, I mean, it enables you to do it, because you go space, space, and then you get the period, right? So, right. Yeah. No, I get it. I get that it's hard. But lots of things are hard, Judd, and we have to overcome them and do right.
But you know what? If it's on the iPhone and I do space, space, I get my period, I don't add an extra space. So the whole thing really comes down to if the technology enables me properly, I won't add the extra space.
Okay.
But I have to just do what I was taught, because my typing teacher in junior high would, you know, come out with a ruler and smack our hands.
And smack your hands, exactly.
What the fuck are you doing there? Where's my second space?
Hashtag make America great again, period, one space, because I said so.
Because you said so. But if you use an iPhone, you can go space, space, because you'll get your period and a space.
I'm not going to do, I mean, I am doing it, but yeah.
Because that's a lot easier than shift, period, unshift, space.
No, I agree. I agree that it's hard. I agree that it's hard to unlearn. I agree that I still make the mistake. I consciously am trying to make the effort of only one. And it's so by rote that you just do it. So, okay, let's go on to the next topic.
We got to finish up with what the whole point was back on the stylus for the iPad.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's right. How did we get here?
Okay, now here's the deal about that. When the first iPads were made, they did not have pressure sensitivity on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
The new iPads have pressure sensitivity on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
That means that have a third dimension. That means that when you press down, it knows that you've pressed down and how hard you've pressed down.
Mm-hmm.
Like a piece of paper, you know, pen, if you don't worry. And so now they've created a stylus that works with that surface. And it's, like you said, it's for very specific things. It's for art, for the most part. And
okay.
You don't really need it for anything other than art. And if you've ever drawn on your iPad, like actually try to draw real art, you can finger paint. And I've done some great stuff, but there's a limit until you have a device to really give you that pinpoint accuracy that you may want in a digital realm. Okay. And they're competing with these high-end art pads that are out there. And that's, I think, what they're shooting for. That's why Adobe is all into it, and everybody who's using it is totally into it. But I don't think you're going to see that people are going to be running with that stylus for everyday users of that Pro. Only people who do very specific artwork.
I like styluses. I've used a stylus on my regular iPads just for the sake of typing with it or whatever. The only problem for me is, like, unless it's, you know, attached with a chain to my neck, I'm going to put it down or lose it or whatever. So I don't know what the stylus for Apple is going to retail for, but I'm not going to buy
$99.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy 10 of them like I would a pack of Bic pens and have them in a cup holder on my desk. So I'm afraid I'm going to lose it, and it's like sunglasses. I don't invest in expensive sunglasses because those are the ones I lose.
Which is why no one's going to buy the darn stylus, which is the same reason why they came out with phones with styluses about 2 years ago.
Right.
And
people don't love them.
And you haven't seen one since.
Right, right.
Because Steve Jobs was right. I mean, this is how we do it. We use our finger.
It's finger technology, right?
That's it. And it's going to be the same thing with that big iPad. It's the only difference is for very specific people. It's a niche market, but they just wanted to ooh and ah people about the fact that it works in conjunction with that pressure-sensitive glass, which is unique to that new product. So, okay, we're good. All the iPad, Apple stuff. I know there's Apple TV. That's exciting as well. We can catch that later once I buy that.
Gotcha. All right.
All right. So do we have time to talk about the last couple of topics?
Yeah, let's talk about them.
Okay. So apparently on The View, the ladies of The View made a comment about a nurse who, well, she's a Miss America contestant. I watched the speech. It was like a Toastmaster 5 to 7 minute speech about being a nurse. It was really cool.
Okay.
And so she had a stethoscope around her neck, and somebody made a comment basically saying to the point, you know, why is she wearing a stethoscope? She's not a doctor.
Which is a little out of touch to begin with. nurses wear stethoscopes, so I don't know why that would be that would be so strange.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's now it's all over the internet. Everyone's pissed off at the ladies of The View for their shitty view.
Newsflash, people don't like The View.
Well, usually it's one person that gets the jumped on. And I think Joe Behar is the one that's getting jumped on for this one.
Is she the only one left of the remaining original crew?
I don't know, but well, it's tough. They got a tough road to hoe.
Okay, so there's that old, what was that old riddle about, you know, a doctor is in the ER and a patient comes in and they're rushed to surgery and the doctor says, I can't operate on this patient because it's my child, right? Uh-huh. Do you remember this? And then what's wrong with the doctor or whatever? Well, it turns out because the doctor was a woman, not a man. Yeah. Right. And that's not the go-to thing people go to in their brain when they hear the term doctor. So I feel like this has been a discussion about gender for the last 40 years. And I guess the way people would presume if someone talked about their coal miner employee being a man, that people assume doctor is a man. It doesn't make it right, but it's sort of the stereotypical way people think. So, I don't know. I guess if I was a nurse, I'd be offended by it, but I don't know that it's wrong. I don't know that it's inherently wrong to default to male with a specific career. Having said that, I don't think it's right to default to male for a specific career. Like, I just think people just have a mindset, and that just is what it is. And Joy Behar is probably 60 and of the mindset where men are doctors. And she was probably told about a bajillion times, you should marry a doctor, right? Like, I almost don't begrudge her that.
Well, but either way, there's so many people pissed off about it, it doesn't matter. I guess that's the whole thing.
Okay, so the culture of pissed offness, right, which has become a thing now. We all are every day looking for reasons to be offended. So, okay, and it's very easy to find reasons to be offended if you watch The View on any given day, let alone that day.
So, isn't that the point?
I think so. I think this taking umbrage is our new national pastime. Fuck baseball. We're not doing that anymore. We're just all being indignant and insulted by everyone. I know that Joy Behar is a 60-year-old white woman, female comedian, I guess I should use that term loosely because I don't know that she's all that funny. So I just don't give a shit that she made an inappropriate gender stereotypical statement. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people do. So I guess if I was 22, I'd be like running to the View or the ABC offices with my pitchfork and my torch saying, get that woman off the air. But I just don't have it in me. Are you offended?
She apologized.
I don't give a shit that she apologized. It really, I mean, do we care that she apologized?
Yeah, I think that if you offend somebody and you, well, you know, I guess they say there's a, what is it, the regret and remorse are two different things.
No, to make it sincere, you have to have regret and you have to have remorse, right? So she's only apologizing because she got in trouble. I don't think she really... Well, maybe she'll know better.
Did she know it was wrong?
Right, I don't know that she does.
You know, I heard them talk about it. I watched the clips and everything. I was like, hmm. But then I watched all these other people going, well, they're still... You know, they should have known better. They're stupid. And I mean, it ruins their brand, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It does ruin the brand. And especially for The View, which is supposed to be a female-centric haven of female generosity. Yeah, it does ruin the brand. So Samantha Bee, former contributor to The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, is now going to have her own show on Comedy Central, another, I think, news format type show. So I'm excited for that. I'm sure it'll be good. She was great. Very dry, very funny.
Oh, you know what that's all about? Is they probably are hedging their bets.
because of Trevor?
Yeah. Has anybody even watched? Has the show even started?
No, it starts next week or something. Really? Yeah, it starts next week.
Because I have a feeling that thing's going to tank.
No.
Yeah.
Well, he's under fire already. Okay, so let's back up one step in Hollywood.
Yeah.
On Monday, a Vanity Fair released a picture of all the late night TV show hosts. And right. Of course, it's just a plethora of white males in their 50s and whatever, yeah. 40s and 50s. So, you know, the Fallons, the Kimmels, the Trevor Noah, the Colberts. Mm-hmm. Although Larry Wilborn and Trevor Noah are, you know, African-American, or Trevor Noah is South African, I guess. Yeah. There's some color now. There's really not a lot of diversity. That's the whole deal. Everybody's mm-hmm. male. So in the Twitterverse, which is now a word that we have in our vocabulary, that people are stating this is what's wrong with Hollywood, that everything is white male centered, and we really need to change this and update, add women, add other diverse ethnicities, that sort of thing. In the late night TV world, mm-hmm. it has been a traditional stronghold of white males. I don't know. I always think that the market declares what's going to win here. If a woman were to come on with a great show, and I'm going to use Amy Schumer, and she's fucked out right now for being everywhere. But if Amy Schumer were to have her own show, and it was good, and it was funny, and it was consistently good and funny, then I think she would be successful too. So I think Chelsea Handler had a show for a long time on late night TV. She did just fine, and she ended it because she wanted to end it, not because the network decided to. So I don't know that this argument of women can't be funny and women don't have the support, I don't know that it has legs. I think the proportionate amount of women comedians who want to do a late night talk show hosting job might be smaller than what the white males are. I hope I'm not setting women back 100 years by saying this. I don't know that it's really that stronghold that we think it is.
Okay. I'm going to totally go on a limb here. But women have the daytime. You know, oh my God.
Did you just say that women have the daytime?
Women have the daytime and those vampires have the night.
Because women are home during the day, barefoot and pregnant in their kitchens. So they can be watching The View and...
The View and Ellen and Rosie and...
Ellen!
And how many more other shows are there? What's that one lady's name? She has one name that she goes by. There's
Oprah?
No.
She's done.
Although she was a daytime show as
well.
But
not a comedian.
Not a comedian, but what is that lady's name? Anyways, there's a whole bunch of...
Meredith Vieira?
No, she doesn't have a show, does she?
Yeah, she does. Or she did. Katie Couric had a show.
Man, see? I mean...
But these weren't comedy shows. These weren't that late night celebrity interview format show.
Well, no. Well, I guess Ellen is, and so is Rosie to some extent, right?
But Rosie's not on the air. What decade are you in?
Oh, is she not anymore?
No, she hasn't been on the air forever.
Okay, well, what do I know?
It's because you work during the day. You don't know.
That's right. I work during the day, so I don't
know. And women don't, apparently, is what you're saying.
You know, that's an interesting question. How many women to men ratio are watching TV in the daytime?
I would venture to say that if you took stay-at-home people, divided them gender specific, that yes, there are less men staying at home during the day than there are probably stay-at-home moms or women. But I bet more men are probably watching TV because staying at home is fucking hard work. There's no TV watching.
There's no TV
when
watching.
You're a stay-at-home mom. Really? At least there wasn't when I was.
Man, I'm just like thinking, you know, I mean.
There were no bonbons on the couch. There was no downtime.
I mean, are the commercials on daytime TV, are they like, you know, buy Gillette razors for men? Are they, you know, be a lumberjack? Are they, you know, I mean, are they like, you know, you work hard and you need a tampon that works hard for you.
That's probably what's on.
I don't know. I mean, let's just straight up. They know who they're marketing to. They know who's watching the TV.
Yeah, somebody knows something. That's for sure. So I think it comes down to this argument. Are women as funny as men?
I don't think that's the argument. I think that they figure they get more male demographics. And in the evening,
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so the 18 to 35 year old, that coveted demographic,
yeah,
is watching at 11:30 and they want to see a guy.
Apparently.
Yeah.
You know, because they're still rude, crude, and crass and all of that stuff that is what David Letterman was, you know? It was kind of that
I guess
sophomoric humor.
I think that 11:30 now has turned into a more traditional, kinder, gentler 11:30.
Yeah.
That, you know, Jimmy Fallon is very likable and very Carson-esque in his ability to relate to the country, to the nation, to that, you know, he has guests on of every ilk, every gender. I think he's the most conformist. And then you've got your Kimmels and now the Colberts of the world who are, and I think I've seen a few of the Colbert shows, and he's phenomenal. I think he's going to be great. So,
well, you know what the key is?
Hmm.
Is the show can't be about yourself.
Right.
See, that's the why, what's his name, couldn't hold the show.
Conan
couldn't hold the show because,
you know, I think you're right.
It was too much about him and not about the guests.
I think you're right.
You're a Toastmaster. Yes, you're allowed to introduce and warm up the crowd. That's your job. Make people feel comfortable. So that way when the guy comes on the show who doesn't know, you know, this is his 15 minutes of fame that you're bringing this guy who he won the Oscar Mayer Wiener singing contest. You got to bring him on. You got to talk to him like he's the most important person on the couch at that moment. That's your job.
And Conan didn't do that well.
I don't think he did.
I think you're right, Judd. This is a good perspective. I hadn't thought of it that way. And I was Team Coco when that whole thing went down with Jay Leno. I think the media didn't help, and I don't think he made it about the show. I think he made it about him. I think that's a very valid point. That's a good one.
And the other part is when he came to L.A., he didn't want to be in L.A. So he spent every moment of time in L.A. trashing it.
You're right. And Fallon took on The Tonight Show but kept it in New York. And I wonder how much he had to fight the network to do that. And it's been more successful probably because of that fight.
Well, it's only been successful because he's a local and does local things in New York. And the fact that Jimmy Kimmel has a show in L.A.
Correct.
So he doesn't, they're not, that gives them both their own turf.
Sure.
So he doesn't, you know, The Tonight Show doesn't have to be in L.A. because there already is a show in L.A. that is a late night show.
You're right.
And Kimmel's not going away anytime soon, I don't think.
No, Kimmel does just fine. So, and he's got his diehard fans, the way Fallon does as well.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting what Colbert takes, which pie he takes from the most.
Well, he's going to take from, I hate to say it, the Tonight Show crowd, because he's in New York, right?
He's in New York. And he has that more, I want to say, refined comedic style. I think Jimmy Kimmel's very funny, but I would think people would feel like Colbert is more refined.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, so I need to get on and see.
Yeah, you do. Clips. You need to check it out. I, you know, I'm a Colbert fan from when he was a correspondent on The Daily Show. The man's funny. He's smart.
Deadpan.
Seems genuine. Yes. He has it all combined in that little
handsome. He is smart. He's like.
Yes.
Yeah. Geniusly smart.
So, all right, well, we'll see how it turns out.
Yeah. So, late night hosts. But could there be a female? Well, I mean, there has been, right? Joan Rivers had a show.
She had a show, and then when she hosted for Johnny Carson in Substitution, she did well.
She did very well.
Yeah. Yes. Could there be a female show? Yes. Does it just need to be the right female? Yes. Just the way it needs to be the right guy.
That's really what it comes down to.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I think there's a little bit of that monarchy of the late night. They have to have, you know, when they substitute, they have to bring, you know, make it so that that person is kind of molded, you know, groomed.
I agree.
Guy or girl, doesn't matter,
yep.
right? hey, this is my, I'm the kingmaker. That's what Johnny Carson was, right? The kingmaker.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So, yeah. All right. Well, we've definitely beat a lot of talk tonight.
Man, we were talkative.
Really? Is that your, like, fifth glass of wine there?
No, only my second.
Okay.
But no dinner. So, two glasses and no food.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. We talked about a whole lot of stuff. Politics kind of all the way through, and we talked about that iPhone. It's going to be exciting, I'm sure.
The iPhone with a backup camera.
With a backup camera. Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, I hate that noise.
You can piss off people. Will they accept your apology? Let's hope they do. Let's get over it. If you don't like something, just keep moving on. Whatever.
Stop being indignant, everybody. Stop it.
Stop it. Diversity in Hollywood. There should be, there should be more, but at least it's not all guys 24/7.
It's better than it was. It's always evolving. I think, we're not stagnant. That's one thing for sure.
Yeah, that's true. So. All right. Well, for TJ Talks, I'm Judd.
And I'm Teresa.
And we will chat with you later.
Talk at you later.
So the 1 billion books that are on shelves in print today,
right?
Recall and burn them all because they have two spaces after the period.
No, don't recall and burn them all.
Because, but-